This podcast is sponsored by Smartsheet, the cloud-based work management platform and best-kept secret of more than half the Fortune 500 companies. Learn more at smartsheet.com/crosscuttingconcerns.
How the app get made, explain your trade, what you love to do every day, the ins and out of what your code's about, or the passion you know you can't live without. How's your data stored or sorted, transformed or imported? Let's chat a bit at a conference, and if it's cool, may re-record it. What framework do you like the best? Explain to us your unit test. Do you have a tip for JavaScript or a dev kit that we can tinker with? A process, a methodology, in depth, no apologies. Step up your code, stay on your toes, cross-cutting concerns. With Matt Groves.
You're listening to the Crosscutting Concerns podcast. I'm your host, Matt Groves. Please visit the site at crosscuttingconcerns.com where you can subscribe, browse the archives, contact me, read show notes, and leave a comment.
On your toes, Crosscutting Concern with Matt Groves.
I'm recording this podcast on April 30th, 2018. My guest today is a teacher and developer evangelist with AuthZero, Joel Lord. How are you doing?
Very good. Thanks, Matt. It's nice and sunny today, so I think spring finally arrived here, so looking good.
Same here in Ohio. Thanks for being on the show. Since you work with AuthZero, online security is probably top of mind for you. I think that's safe to say. The mm-hmm. most basic part of online security is still the password. So what are some things that people get wrong, developers get wrong, when they implement password systems?
Well, of course, the first thing that comes into mind is storing passwords in clear text. And everybody knows that you shouldn't do that, but people still tend to do it. I think that as developers, we get very excited when we have a new project. It's easy to neglect stuff like the login screen and taking care of the credentials and all that stuff. So people take shortcuts and they think that, you know, security is not that important because it's only a quick prototype or a small site and there's not a lot of users. In reality, a lot of the hacks are done using bots, using vulnerabilities that are known. So using a strong encryption and solid password is always, always necessary. There's a few other things, too, to keep in mind. I mean, limitations on password. It makes sense if you're asking for capital letters, special characters, stuff like that. But adding limitations like on the number of digits or on the number of characters is probably not a very good idea. Recently, I've encountered a hotel chain for which their loyalty program asks for a 4-digit password. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's 10,000 possible combinations. And it's a large hotel chain. You wouldn't think that they would do something like that. 10,000 combinations you can brute force that in a few seconds with a computer, or probably within a few hours, just manually entering numbers. So you have to be careful about how you handle that information.
I think I know which hotel chain you're talking about because I was using the same site recently. Fortunately, it's not one that I use very often.
Good. I've been hacked on that site and I had to call them and they seemed surprised that I was hacked and I lost all of my loyalty points at that point.
Oh my goodness. They shouldn't be surprised. I'm guessing it probably happens a lot with that system.
I would guess so.
One of the things that bothers me with passwords, and you mentioned it briefly, was password requirements, where a password has to have a certain number of special characters, a certain length, a certain special character, a number, things like that. What happens is you go to these sites, and sometimes they'll have a little indicator saying this is a strong password, this is a weak password, mm-hmm. which is nice, but it's just not implemented very well. So if I put in, for instance, password 123 exclamation point, that's considered a strong password. Where if I enter something that's generated by like LastPass, it says, oh, this is not acceptable. This is not a good password. So that always bothers me when they make an attempt, but it's really only like a half attempt at a good password system.
No, you're right. It is definitely a problem. And also all those requirements on the passwords tend to make it counterintuitive for users to use password because they need to add numbers and special characters and they can't remember it.
Yeah.
So it brings on a lot of different passwords. And it's also very contested. There's people that say having limitations actually reduces the number of combinations possible. So it's actually easier to brute force into a password site that has different limitations like that.
Yeah, and then there's the famous battery horse correct staple XKCD comic. I'll link to that in the show notes at crosscuttingconcerns.com. Maybe you'll see what I mean. It kind of explains it in a funny way. Tell me about passwordless authentication and how it works as an alternative to passwords.
Passwordless is a very interesting technology that is getting more and more traction now. One of the weakest links in security will always be the human factor. People will have very, very complex, but they'll write it down on a post-it and just put it on next to their screen. So obviously it's completely useless. So there's a lot of different alternatives that are coming out, which is passwordless. We've saw them and we see them now being used as part of a multi-factor authentication process. So if you log in, it will ask you for your phone number and it will send you a single use code that you need to punch in order to enter the website. There's other different strategies. There's email links. It will send you an email and you just click on the link to log into your website. Biometrics. There's also the RSA keys. I don't know, like they're not popular anymore, but those are little keychains that they would just display a random number every minute or so. So you'd have to punch in that number in order to log into a website. More and more, we're seeing websites that are actually using those as the primary way to log into a website. So instead of relying on a password that somebody would stick on their screen, they actually rely on different things like biometrics, the voice, email links, and so on.
So you mentioned the password on the post-it note, and I don't know if you've seen the movie Ready Player One yet, but this is actually a plot point in the movie, is the head of a major corporation put his very bad password, by the way, on a post-it note that was easy for the heroes to discover. So even in the movies, it's a problem. And you mentioned biometrics, and I've brought this up multiple times. We talked to Bill Senf about this, and he has sort of mixed feelings about biometrics, things like fingerprints and mm-hmm. retina scans, things like that, because you can't change your fingerprints. If that's ever compromised somehow, there's nothing you can do to go ahead and change those. What do you think about biometrics?
Well, first of all, they're not perfect yet. They're being worked on, and that's one of the things. Voice recognition, which is getting better and better. I have a Google Home at home, at my place, and it will kind of make the difference if it's me asking a question or if I want to add a reminder versus if my wife is asking something. So it kind of detects, but I definitely wouldn't use that as part of an authentication process. It's not that good yet. Fingerprints, of course, they can be compromised, but so do passwords. So pretty much any security, there's always flaws in it. But a fingerprint is much harder to get than an actual password on a piece of paper. So, you know, you can't just cut someone's finger and use it. Well, I guess you could, but but there's fingerprint scanners that you can use to print those fingerprints. So there's always ways to go, but it's much harder, especially for just the general people.
In regards to the voice recognition and face recognition, I think those systems can be defeated with just recordings and pictures for the most part. So I wouldn't rely on those either. Mm-hmm. Fingerprint I use on my phone. I agree with you that it's probably worth the risk for the convenience. But those other ones, I don't think I would want to use those.
Even the face recognition, there are some fancy things that people are trying to implement. Like they require you to blink. So it proves that it's not a picture. Mm. Of course, you could still get a video of somebody blinking, but trying to force somebody to record a video where they blink would be a little bit tricky again. So there's different ways to work around that, but it's definitely not perfect yet.
Maybe a certain pattern of blinking, like a blinking Morse code or something.
Then you'd have a password in Morse code, which...
Right. Mm. All right, so you mentioned what passwordless is. What are some examples of major websites that I could go to right now that are using this passwordless system?
Well, for software developers, I think the one that comes into mind right away is Slack. So if you want to log into your Slack account, it will suggest that you use a magic link instead of typing in your password, which is very useful. I use it most of the time, mostly because I use randomly generated passwords. So mm-hmm. the time to open my password manager and all that and find my password is just as long as clicking on that link, opening my email, and then being able to log in. So Slack is definitely the most obvious one. They've been doing it for quite a while now. But yesterday, actually, I logged into my Amazon account from a different computer, and I didn't have my password manager installed on it. But I saw that they have logged in with a single use code, and they have exactly that. They have a login. They'll send you a code via email, just a few digits, and you just punch them in and you're logged in. So Amazon is actually going that way now.
Well, that's pretty significant. If Amazon's doing it, then chances are that's going to be happening a lot of other places.
Mm-hmm.
So you work for Auth0. How does Auth0 provide or help provide passwordless authentication?
Well, I'd say that they help with authentication in general. So they have all the systems in place that you don't have to worry about, you know, all the security stuff or getting hacked or the brute force protection. As part of the settings, when you create a new application, there's even one just little checkbox that you can tick, and it will enable passwordless authentication on your website instead of traditional passwords. So by ticking that, your login form will simply have an email. You type in an email and it emails a link in your inbox, and then you can log in from that link. So very, very easy to use, very simple. So of course I'm biased, I like the product, but it's a very, very simple way to implement passwordless authentication.
We complained a lot about passwords at the beginning of this podcast, but are there any major objections or trade-offs or downsides of using a passwordless system?
Well, of course, there's always downsides to any technology.
Right.
With the new web authentication API, they want to really make use of those little keys there, where the USB keys, where there's a single button that you can press on it, and that acts as a password. But you have to carry your little dongle with you all the time. And some of them are very, very small, so they're easy to lose. The other downsides are, you know, relying on your phone to get your SMS. There's always something, another physical object that you need in order to use those passwordless systems. So there's always kind of a password, but it's just in a different form. Relying on a second system could be a little bit tricky, I guess. But I would also argue that this is no different than having to carry around the key for your house or for your car. There's something that you need, like a physical key in this case, to unlock a system.
I can imagine a situation where my cell phone is dead and I need to purchase a charger, but I can't purchase a charger unless I log in with my cell phone. That sort of situation, right?
Yeah, exactly. Thankfully, there's usually a backup plan or something that you can use, or a plan B that you can use with most of those systems. But you're right, it could be an issue at that point.
All right, I've got a couple more questions for you to close out the show, but right now it's time to play the game that's sweeping the nation.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for your favorite game from Cross-Cutting Concerns, where the question is... is it a JavaScript framework or something we just made up? Now, here's your host, Matt Groves.
Thanks, Joe. Now, as you know, Joel, they give JavaScript libraries awfully funny names these days. In this game, I'm going to list three names of JavaScript libraries. The goal of the game is to tell me which ones are real, which ones are fake. Real means that they are listed on npmjs.com at the time of this recording. And just to keep things interesting, if you get all three of these correct, you're going to win a $5 gift card. Are you ready to play?
Absolutely.
How prepared for you are this? Are you much of a JavaScript developer or a Node developer?
I do mostly JavaScript right now, and I spent the whole weekend just reading through the NPM list just to make sure that I can get that $5 gift card.
Oh, no. What a waste of a weekend. All right, so here are the names. The first one is Scratch Auth. The second one is Cow Auth, and the third one is app.auth, and the dot is spelled out D-O-T, so app.auth.
All right, so Scratch, Cow, and app dot.
Yes.
I'd say that Cow is definitely a real one.
Cow is real?
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, it sounds like a JavaScript library for sure.
All right.
Scratch, probably real, and app dot, I'd say, is not real.
Okay, so just to recap, Scratch Auth is real, Cow Auth is real, and app dot auth is not real.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry, Joel, you did not win this round.
That was a waste of a weekend then.
Scratch Auth is real. It's a utility for MIT's programming language, Scratch. So there you go. Cow Auth is not real. Sorry, I made that one up. It's a good name, though, for a library.
Yeah, I think I'll register the domain right now.
And then app.auth is real. It's for app.net token generation. So I want to say thanks to Jeffrey Miller, who emailed in the link to a random noun generator that I used to help create and find this week's names. If you have suggestions for odd-sounding JavaScript libraries, real or fake, go to crosscuttingconcerns.com/contact, and I just might use them in the next episode. Well, thanks for playing, Joel. Sorry you didn't win. But are there any resources you'd recommend for listeners who want to learn more about password lists?
The one resource that I really like, of course, is the Odd Zero blog. So our own blog, there's a ton of information there, all available about authentication in general, security, handling, credentials, encryption. Anything you want to know basically about authentication is available there, and it's a great source of information.
Is there anything else you'd like to promote as we wrap up the show?
If you want more information, though, or if you want to meet with me, there's my website that is available. I speak at a lot of different conferences. I also like to do meetups, so if you run a meetup and you want to invite me, just go take a look. If I'm in the area, I'll be more than happy to join you guys, or just send me an email, and I'll be happy to see if I can make it. It's javascripteverything.com.
My guest today has been Joel Lord. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah. Cross-cutting concerns.
This has been the Cross-Cutting Concerns podcast, produced and recorded by Matt Groves, 2018. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media and leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you downloaded this podcast. For show notes, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com. This episode is recorded under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. Hosting for this episode was made possible in part by Microsoft.
This week's podcast is brought to you by Smartsheet. Are your projects pulled off like Band-Aids? You need Smartsheet. No more pain, just simple, collaborative work management in the cloud from a beautiful UI. Learn more at smartsheet.com/crosscuttingconcerns.
It was recorded and mixed with the help of Camtasia Recorder, Skype, and Audacity. Music is by Joe Ferg. Check out joeferg.com, JOEFERG, to listen to more great music.
Stay on your toes, step up your cold, stay on your toes, step up your cold, stay on your toes. Cross-cutting concern with Matt Groves.